Let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith. If your marriage is in trouble, don't touch that dial. Today, you'll hear teaching that could bring you back from the brink. Principles to help you navigate what may seem to be impossible waters. Your marriage can be put back together. Stay with us. From the Moody Church in Chicago, this is Running to Win with Dr. Erwin Lutzer, whose clear teaching helps us make it across the finish line. Today, Erwin Lutzer continues a 10-part series on fighting for your family. Listen now as Dr. Lutzer comes again to speak on playing for keeps.
I've discovered in my own life that when I commit something to God, sometimes it is so difficult to commit it to Him because now I know that I can no longer manipulate the situation. I'm recognizing that it is out of my hands, and it is very difficult to give it to God. Why? Because I need faith to believe that it is in His hands and not my own. That's what it means to commit your marriage and yourself to God. Now, furthermore, what this means in practical terms is that now you're not going to live in retaliation. One of the great lessons that we have to learn is this, that when we are sinned against, we should not sin in return. I'm using here the illustration of David, who, when Saul threw a spear at him, didn't say, "Oh, you threw that spear at me? Here's one I'm throwing back." David didn't do that. He didn't retaliate. Don't retaliate. Why? "Vengeance is mine. I will recompense," says the Lord. If you've given your marriage over to God, it is now His responsibility, because all that really matters is His glory. The end of the day, nothing else really matters. The principle of God's glory. Secondly, the principle of self-examination. The principle of self-examination. We live in a culture that is filled with woundedness, woundology. And of course, we live in such a culture because of the brokenness of the home, because of abuse, sexual immorality, molestation. The list is long. Now, as a result of that woundedness, which I recognize is very serious, people bring to their marriage all kinds of issues, all kinds of baggage that I mentioned before, that they aren't really willing to deal with. And the reason they aren't is because they reason in their mind, considering the way in which I was treated, I have every right to be angry. I have every right to be angry with my husband. I have every right to expect His complete affection. I have every right to be jealous. And on it goes. And so as a result of those wounds, what people are really saying is, "I want you to heal my wound. That's why I married you. I want you to heal my wound, but if you touch it, I will scream and holler and make this the most miserable marriage you have ever possibly imagined." You know, I know. The reason that I prayed about this message so much and gave it over to God is because I know human nature. I know my own heart. There are things in our lives that we will never admit to unless God shows us. Until that time, we are fully justified. In fact, some of you for whom this particular point is intended, right now you're missing it because in your mind you're saying, "I'm justified to be who I am. Look at the way in which he acts. Look at the way in which she treats me. I have a right to be angry. I have a right to resentment. Look at the way in which life treated me. And I have entitlement considering what I'm through." Folks, if you don't see that in your life and deeply repent, your marriage is always going to be in difficulty. There will always be obstacles to harmony. So the second principle is the principle of self-examination. The third is one of individual responsibility. Number three, individual responsibility. Now, I spoke earlier about the fact that there are men who, their wives who've come to me and have said, "You know, my husband is into pornography. What do I do?" Couple of comments. First of all, be assured of this, that nobody who does not want to be fixed can be fixed. If your husband doesn't want to be fixed, most assuredly, you can't fix him, and you can't even contribute to his fixing, if I can put it that way, because if he doesn't want to be fixed, he won't be. Now, one of the things, and now I'm speaking to the wives, though it could be the other way around, you understand that when I preach this, it could be flipped. Could be the wife versus the husband versus the wife. But the simple fact is that everyone who is addicted has one agenda, and that is to this: he wants to continue on in the way in which he is living without interruption and with a minimal amount of problems and hassles. That's his great desire. Now, what you have to do is to help him to own his own stuff, to use an expression. Because you can't own his stuff for him, nor should you cover for him. What you have to do is to help him to understand that unless there are positive changes and accountability, not just to you, but to others, that you will expose him, that you will not allow this to go on in your home, particularly if it is such an addiction, if it is abuse. You are not going to lie for him. You're not going to cheat for him. Why? Because you love him too much to contribute to his particular lifestyle. It must be confronted and exposed. And so what we must do as individuals is to realize that it is so important for us to take responsibility. Alcoholics, stop blaming your employer, stop blaming your wife, stop blaming your parents, stop blaming whoever you're blaming, because I know something about the characteristics of such people. Stop blaming and take responsibility and say, I am responsible for my attitude, for my actions, what I am doing. I resolve to own my stuff. Would you do that, please? Number four, this is critical. The principle of communication. The principle of communication. Years ago when I did marriage counseling, I used to say to the couple that would be in my office, now I want you to write down all of the faults and the problems of your mate. Here's a sheet of paper. Some people would say, one sheet of paper? I need the whole notepad. Okay, just one pen? I might run out of ink. They would write and write and write. It would come like the pen of a mighty writer. Then I would say, all right, now I want you to do is to write your own faults. Here's another sheet of paper. Oh, let's see. Well, you know, I guess I did lose my temper one time, and yeah, it's true, I hit her, but not very hard. My friend, do you see the problem? How we can see other people's faults with 20/20 vision, and we ourselves can be filled with pride and anger and self-serving and all those things, and we are as blind as a brick on the wall to see it. Communication. I find it incredible to think that there are some parents who think that the way in which they really should raise their families is to be super critical of everybody. So you have a wife who's super critical of her husband, a husband who's super critical of his wife, and they even bring up the children that way. Constantly, these children are making mistakes. They can't obey. No matter what they do, it's wrong. My friend, do you realize how you're destroying any possibility of a relationship? Do you remember that story that I told you about a counselor, an attorney who said to a man who wanted to divorce his wife, he said, I hate her. He said, in order to make sure that you really hurt her, because you want to hurt her, why don't you just for 1 month always say kind things, encourage her, thank her for whatever she does for you, and just don't say a single negative thing. Then she's going to think that you really love her and so forth, so you're going to set her up, and then you're going to really shove the sword in her heart by handing her divorce papers. He thought, well, you know, since I'm getting rid of her in a month anyway, I guess I can try the experiment. So all that he did was praise her, thank her for everything. In any area in which he wanted her to improve, he would always say, you know, this is really great. Instead of coming home and looking at what was in the frying pan and sarcastically suggesting that it was an unidentified flying object. He now spoke words of love and compassion. Well, you know the rest of the story, of course. Within a month, they had a second honeymoon. Of course. The words that come out of our mouths. Now, something else that is so critical in the relationship is listening. Listening. You must talk to each other, and you must listen. I know I have problems with that. I think all of us as men do, to listen. One woman said to me, you know, my husband won't talk to me. He sits there like the great stone face. Yeah, I understand. I wonder why he doesn't talk to you. I'll bet. Wait a moment, I'm a pastor. I venture to say that he probably talks to his friends. He probably talks to them very freely and tells about everything that's going on in his life. And he gets home and he won't talk to his wife. I have a suspicion as to why he doesn't. Because he fears being judged. He thinks to himself, she's going to shame me, she's going to blame me, she's going to ask what kind of a person I am to have these kinds of struggles. Wives, would you be able to handle it if your husband ever became so honest with you that he honestly told you the struggles that he's going through with lust and maybe pornography? Could you handle it, or would you just simply say, as one wife did, that I know about, what kind of a pervert are you? Well, that really took care of that relationship. That was the last time he would ever talk to his wife about anything that was personal. If your husband begins to talk to you, you need to enter into his world and realize that this talk, no matter how hard it is really bringing about healing. So you have to be at his side. My friend, I preached this message here at the Moody Church, and I was very interested to hear the response. Many couples testified to the fact that it finally enabled them to face reality. And you know, in facing that reality, there was finally some healing that happened within their relationship. I sure hope that you listen next time, because it will be the conclusion of this very, very important message entitled Playing for Keeps. And also it's important because this is part of a larger series of messages entitled Fighting for Your Family. Because we have to fight for our families today, don't we? There are enemies outside the home. There are enemies within the home. I preach a message in this series on the entertainment industry. There are things such as abuse, all of these critical issues, finances, for example. We need to be able to handle these biblically, that our relationships within our families might be strong and affirming. Dave is going to come in a moment and give us some very important information. And be sure to listen and to continue to listen. And thanks in advance for your involvement in our lives. God bless you.
Thank you, Dr. Lutzer. Today, Erwin Lutzer spoke again on Playing for Keeps, the final message in a 10-part series on fighting for your family. Next time on Running to Win, more on the importance of listening to each other. Running to Win is all about helping you find God's roadmap for your race of life. Fighting for Your Family is a video series with a discussion guide for small groups. The DVDs and the guide will be sent as our thank you for your gift of any amount to support Running to Win. Just call us at 1-800-215-5001. That's 1-800-215-5001. Ask about Fighting for Your Family. Online, go to offerrtw.com or write to Running to Win, Moody Church, 1635 North LaSalle Boulevard, Chicago, Illinois, 60614. This is Dave McAllister. Running to Win is a ministry of the Moody Church.